We're going to continue the hour by talking about how you can talk with your kids and help them process the events that have happened in the news in the last couple of days, that horrible school shooting in Texas that has left at least 21 dead. Obviously, we're all still reeling from that, and kids in the schools certainly as much and more than anyone else. What do we know about that situation, and how can we help kids work through it mentally, emotionally, psychologically? We've already got some statements from experts that are up on our website, chapelboro.com. A really good statement in particular from Orange County School Superintendent Dr. Monique Felder that included some details and some resources to help parents with kids having that conversation. Chapel Hill Carver is school superintendent. Superintendent Dr. Naya Hamlet issuing a similar statement. We got both of them up on chapelboro.com. Right now, we're joined on the phone by Dorothy Espelaz. She's a professor of education at UNC. Focus in her research on violence prevention in the schools, bullying prevention, and other associated issues. And she joins us now on the phone to talk about the school shooting and how we can talk to each other about it. Dr. Espelaz, thank you so much for being with us today. Good morning.
Great, and good morning.
So first of all, before we get into the details of the conversation that folks are having with kids, what do we know about the impacts of school shootings and just violence in the schools on kids? I'm not even talking about kids necessarily who are in those schools, but kids in schools that are not directly affected by a particular incident are still dealing with the trauma of it and trying to process it and work through it, and it's affecting their life and their environment as well. What do we know about the impact that has?
Well, absolutely. We know that, you know, even the kids in the schools now in K-12, so elementary, middle school, and high school, unfortunately, school shootings are something that they've grown up with. They're very familiar with. It's become a norm, right? For many of us, I've been studying bullying and school shootings and violence in K-12 settings for 25 years. But I certainly wasn't a person that, when I went to school, we didn't think about school shootings. I think that this is on the minds of parents. It's on the minds of administrators and teachers and the kids themselves. My team here from Chapel Hill, we're in elementary school, so we've been here all week hanging out with third through fifth graders, and we have to do it again today. And it's on their minds, and they're talking about it. And so this is the reality until we figure out why it is that this is something that kids have to deal with. We have to talk to them. And I appreciate, you know, the superintendents in North Carolina putting out these statements. It's much appreciated because parents are at a loss. How do I talk to my kids? They can't escape it. Kids have cell phones. They have social media. They're hearing things. And they're scared. We were in schools yesterday. There was a number of kids absent. Parents just decided not to send their kids to school yesterday for fear of this. The best way to keep your child protected is to keep them at home. And that's an issue that pervades all of us.
So when parents are having that conversation with kids, or really anyone having the conversation with kids, because you're having the conversation with them right now in the work that you're doing, how do you begin to have that conversation? Because I think starting it has got to be one of the hardest steps.
It is the hardest, and I think some parents are going to avoid that. And what I say to parents is don't avoid it, because they're going to get information from their teachers and administrators or their peers, or it's all over social media, right? Like if you have your radio on in the car when you're taking the kids to school, they'll hear it. So don't avoid it. I think limit their exposure to that, but at the same time, try to shift it to and highlight the protection, right? So the superintendents have put it, these posts in, how are we protecting you? But when kids ask their parents when they're on the way to school, can this happen to me? Can it happen at my school? The reality is it could, but we need to focus on the positive. What are we doing to create that safety and that connection? Because in reality, and this is what parents don't want to hear, right, especially those in Texas right now, is that we're safer in schools than we are in some other locations of where we go, going out to eat, for example. The data are clear on that. It doesn't feel as if that's the case, but it is. That's the reality. And so focusing on that positive nature. Now, some kids are not going to want to talk about it because they already have a predisposition to be anxious themselves. But I also say to parents, And that's okay. Allow them to process it in other ways, whether if they're younger, they're drawing, something creative. And parents need to, and I've said this, parents need to watch their own reactions, right? So we're in the schools now collecting data, and we can't come in looking as if we've just been so distressed and been crying all night and upset. So parents, if they need to, just take a moment, because kids will watch how their parents are reacting to this. And so if we're overly anxious, if we're upset ourselves, the kids will mimic that in so many ways. Recognizing, too, that middle school and high school students, as I said, this is a new norm for them. We've had 30 shootings, and it's not even June in the United States. So this is something that we have to talk about. And really just continue to process at the level of knowing your kids, too, of what do they need, and making sure that they're not, you know, watching, if they're middle school and high school, is watching too much of the social media, because there's lots of misinformation about the shooting as well that's on social media.
Speaking with Dorothy Espelage, again, professor of education at UNC, and you mentioned it in a couple of different ways, the kind of cycle of anxiety and negativity that we can get into, and you're right, and the kids see that, and they model their behavior after that, and it's a really hard cycle once you're in to pull yourself out of. You start feeling anxious, you turn to social media, you get negative stuff, misinformation, or actual information that's just very negative, right. And it just kind of feeds on itself. So if we find ourselves doom scrolling, if we find ourselves in that cycle, what can we do to pull ourselves out of it?
We've got to pull ourselves out of it. You've got to distract yourself, you know, go for a walk, turn off the TV, turn off your cell phone, because we're going to have to take care of ourselves. And it's everywhere, right? So this is the conversation, at least until we forget it, at least until we just have to do something different. And I think we have to support one another not to co-ruminate, right? So the big thing is a lot of adolescents, middle school and high school students, will co-ruminate around the subject. And I think as parents and as colleagues, we just have to disengage to a certain extent. It's not forgetting, but it's also just kind of taking care of yourself. It's self-care.
On a policy level, what resources would you say need to be in the schools to help kids with their mental health, to help kids get through situations like that? And to what extent do those resources actually exist in the schools right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I've studied school violence, and schools are protective spaces, and I've done that for 25 years. And what I've seen over the last 25 years is increasingly we have more isolated kids. There's more compromised relationships between teachers and students, especially during COVID, right? So the anxiety is high, family stress is high. What we need to remember is the most protective factors of kids in the schools, yes, certainly having the security and that sense of the school is protecting them. But what it comes down to is relationships. And so teachers need to take the time now, it's at the end of the school year, check in with those kids. How do we minimize the isolation that can contribute to the things that we're seeing? This particular shooting is no different than the others, that it really comes down to the lack of positive relationships. So pay attention, take the time, let's connect. The fact that we have 20% of middle school and high school students that do not have a significant relationship with an adult in the school is a problem. And that's what keeps me up at night, that if we do not continue to foster positive relationships, and I understand academics and I understand testing, but the reality is every kid that steps in our schools in K-12 settings has to have a relationship with an adult, a role model that's positive, and that's what we need to focus on and try to understand how the isolation pre-COVID was a problem that contributed to violence in the schools, but it's exacerbated by the stress families and communities are experiencing. So you don't have to be, you don't, as a child in our K-12 settings, you do not have to have a lot of friends. You need one significant adult that you can turn to when you're upset. You need one friend that you can confide in when you have issues. And that's what we need to talk about, is positive school climate and connectedness. That's how we're going to achieve the academics we want. That's how we're going to create a workforce that's positive. So it's all about, like, finding that isolated kid and figuring out what they need psychologically.
Speaking with Dr. Dorothy Espelage, UNC, as we start to wrap up this conversation, and I think this question is going to pick up right from what you just said, but your research also focuses on violence prevention in the schools. What steps need to be taken as far as that goes to prevent situations like this from happening?
Well, I think we need to start doing violence prevention. We're not doing violence prevention now in our schools since COVID. I think that there, you know, a lot of administrators are just focused on trying to find the kids, that we still have kids that are not back in the classroom, right? And so there has to be space for social emotional learning and competencies. But we do know that in the state of many states across the country, we're not doing violence prevention. There is no social emotional learning. Again, the focus is on trying to just get through the year. It's been a tough couple years. But when we come back in the fall, I would hope that all the superintendents and administrators that are listening to this is that you have to make space for social-emotional learning and other types of programming to prevent violence and build positive relationships, because it's absolutely not happening across the country.
And then finally, as we wrap up, what else should parents know? What else should teachers and administrators know about helping kids process all of this?
Just keep talking. Keep talking. Ask them what they need and check yourself. We have, as adults, should have the best coping strategies. We need to model that for the kids, as I said, because they're not necessarily learning how to manage basic day-to-day kind of stressors. And this is a big one. So continue to talk and be the best adult role model you could be and build those positive relationships. And that should be the focus.
Any good online resources that people can access?
Absolutely. We can make this available to you. We have a number of statements that's coming out, and so we can make those available.
Again, Dr. Dorothy Espelage, Professor of Education at UNC, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
I appreciate it. Take care.